And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, listeners. And welcome to Macabre, a dark history podcast. I'm Blair.
I'm Hallie.
We're very happy that you came to join us and hang out with us today. Thank you so much for choosing Macabre as your entertainment of the hour. Remember, the show is not for the faint of heart, and negative energy is not allowed. Grab the squeegee, because we need to do a little housekeeping. If you want a little more from us, we are on Patreon, where you can listen to us early and ad-free and see us. That seems to be a thing. Faces now. We have faces.
Facial expressions.
Facial expressions, yeah.
Every one of the images that it captures, I swear to you, is...
Oh, no.
I have to move the... When I'm editing stuff and it's, do you want to use this image? I'm like, nope. Do you want to use this image? Nope. Do you want to use this image? No.
It's probably all me going...
No, I just feel like, yeah, we're both always doing something. It's worth it.
It is worth it. Sometimes when we sign off and you can see the pictures at the bottom, it'll show you highlights and the faces in there.
I shut my blinds because it's so bright. And even with the blinds shut, there's still this much. I don't know why. It's so bright. And it's overcast. So that makes no sense. It's not like there's
crazy
like sun in my face. It's gray outside.
That's so weird. I know, it's overcast here too, but it's
dark.
I have just about 6 inches worth of window that I can see out of in my two windows in here.
If only we had a rainbow.
I know. Because guess what, guys? We've been teasing about it forever. But we're talking about Wizard of Oz today. W is for Wizard of Oz. I hope you're excited. I know I was. This is going to be a good time.
Yeah.
I know we got a lot of feedback on the O is for Onset, with a lot of our listeners love movies. Who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
But it was really cool to hear about, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Or did you ever hear about this movie? And I'm like, dude, no. But Wizard of Oz, it's a classic. It's legendary. It set film up for the future. But oh, did it have its macabre moments? Yeah. But before we get there.
Housekeeping.
So yes, if you like what you're hearing, please leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Come join us over at the private Facebook group, where you too can be one of our fam. There's a lot of amazing and magnificent listeners over there, and you are as well. So cool. Come join the fam. Tell a friend. Recommended at your work potluck. Gossip to your cats about us. Your dogs, your fish, your gerbils and hamsters, your ferrets, your snakes, all of them, all of the critter choir. Just gossip about us. Whatever brings you joy, spread the word. All of our links and ways to find us and contact us are in the show notes, so please go check it out. Speaking of, just want to say a huge thank you to all of our listeners who submitted ideas for the Why is for You Pick topic, because that's coming up very soon. We love it when you guys reach out to us, recommend topics. It really does mean the world to us, and we are fascinated by some of the stuff that you guys know about, find, because there's so much we learn from you, and we really appreciate that. So thank you so much. You guys freaking rock. And if you haven't heard, we did pick the topic, and we are going to be doing Bonnie and Clyde. So big freaking thank you to Angel for recommending that. Times a thousand, Angel, because you submitted so much content to us in the email. So thank you. That really means a lot to us, and we really appreciate it. So, there's more to come for season 3, because we are wrapping up the season very soon. Do we want to tease about it? Do we want to say it yet? Or do we want to wait?
I think we want to wait.
Yeah, we're going to wait.
There will be some big reveals that are happening over season 3 in multiple ways. But yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
Yep. Be prepared, people. Buckle up, because things are about to change. And if you have video right now, you might be asking a couple questions about things you might be seeing. But I'm not going to say anything.
No.
I'm not saying anything. And that's all I'm going to say. I don't know. It's probably very mean of us, but I fucking love teasing people. Okay. Today we are discussing something that we have been talking about for some time, like I mentioned. And yes, thank you so much for everybody who comment on our episodes and want to chat about it. Oh, for Onset was about the history of film and things that have gone down. So if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that yet, I definitely recommend it, because we did mention a couple things about this topic in there today, but we held off because this particular film deserves its own episode. So today we are talking about, yes, The Wizard of Oz and how it came to be. Lights, camera, action. Here are my hype notes. Fires and asbestos and injuries. Oh my. What wasn't macabre about the set of the 1939 film Wizard of Oz? From hazardous makeup to disastrous stunts on set, it would seem like this film just wasn't supposed to be made. Join us as we peek behind the curtain to find what it looks like to make such classic children's books become classic film movie magic. So here we go. Let's talk about the book, because we wouldn't have the movie if it weren't for the book. Like so many movies, it began that way. The Wonderful Wizard of Oz stemmed from the mind of author L. Frank Baum. And now Lyman Frank Baum was born on May 15th of 1856 and wore many hats throughout his life, particularly in the field of writing. It began for Lyman with a career in journalism in, guess it, Aberdeen, South Dakota. Very odd place, right? You wouldn't think. But he became so prominent that he ended up going to Chicago not long after that. He was very sought after. So in the late 1800s, he started writing stories for children. And this would lead Mr. Baum to the work that defines his life. The first book of the series was published in 1900. It was an instant hit with kids. We're talking, if you remember, the Harry Potter craze, but on steroids. There were kids that would line up outside of bookshops just like they do for series now. And Baum had so many letters that he couldn't get back to all of these children, and they were always asking him about what else is next. So he never thought it would go as far as it did. He wrote another 13 books in the series. If you're like, hold on, there's more than 13 books in that series. That's because he ended up passing away in 1920. So he did 13 books. There were writers that carried the series on for him after the fact and added their own twists. So yes, it's quite an extensive series. But the original was what really became the popularity, and it spread across the world and it became a hit everywhere. So his last book that he penned was known as Glinda of Oz, and it was published just 1 year after his death. And then it was, of course, picked up later on. Now, from there, we're hitting a time in history where books are great, but we're also becoming more popular with the plays and films of sorts and just articles about things, and things are getting into different medias. And this story is a really great example of how a story can be adapted to new technology and new media that's coming to the world. So from pages to screen, it's 2 years after The Wizard of Oz was published. The first stage adaption of the first book opened in Chicago. So Chicago, of course, is a big area for the arts. It became such a huge hit that a year later, Broadway took it on. That says something.
Yeah.
The show toured for years around the U.S. after that, almost a decade. I mean, it really was very popular. Baum's fantastical world was more than the time's abilities to fully replicate it in reality. So stage performance was a really great time for that because you rely on the audience's imagination. You can paint sets, so it's easier to do. Film was just another story back then. But that's not to say that they didn't try. The story was adapted again, and this time into different little silent films between the years of 1910 and 1925. But unfortunately, it just wasn't the same. So silent films started in 1894, and though they had a handful of years to get their footing, it wasn't the match for Mr. Baum's imagination.
I feel like how can we tell that story silently? It's the magic of it is...
Yes.
Everything that you can... Yeah. No.
And the color.
Yeah.
Even in the books. And then... And we'll talk about this too, but they change things. They still do that in movies now, but they changed so much of it to try to make it more silent film friendly that it was like, the heck is this? This isn't Wizard of... They had like weird things in there and characters that didn't exist. It was just like, okay. Yeah. Pretty weird stuff. If you like, I think you can YouTube it because I did get a little like snippet clip of one of them. If you matched it up with some really scary music, a couple of those, it might be nightmare fuel. Some of the costumes are just like, oh boy. Yeah. So. Silent films, needless to say, totally didn't do the books justice. Sorry, yeah, still true today. I love movie adaptions and like show adaptions of stuff, but dude, sometimes no, the book is just better. So where do you go from here? Some things that, of course, they changed because financially and technologically speaking, it just some of that stuff just wasn't feasible. It still remained a big hit. Like the play. Total banger. People loved it. Like, they were still going to that. They were reading the books. The silent films did not put a damper on the popularity of either one of those at all, which is good to know. It was, the silent films were just so unsuccessful that they were worried that if they were to try this again in the future, because Baum didn't want to give up on it. He really did want to adapt it. He didn't know how. And he got disappointed about it. And from there, obviously, he was getting older. He was still doing his thing, but it wasn't something that was as important to him. So rights got sold after his death to the claims for Oz. And it did pass hands throughout those couple of years between then and the famous movie. But the books and plays, obviously... were still a frustration for everybody who bought the rights. They wanted to do something. So in 1933, there was actually an animated short that came out. And they thought, hey, we're going to be able to do something different with this. It's animated. We can make something happen. But it just wasn't that magical world of Oz. And we wouldn't really see what the magic of that imagination from Mr. Baum was until 6 years later. Though the Depression was on its way out and its effects were still being felt, things were looming in the future of the world. Things were just not in a good point in time. People were feeling the financial distress, and that was no different for the film industry. People were very... I don't know. We see it today. We're frugal when things get rough. We don't want to really go into doing anything extravagant. The film industry had a completely way of working then, even though it was in its infancy. It was just something that was too daunting. They didn't want to take it on. And not to mention, there were constantly films being rolled in and out. It used to be they could film a movie in a few months. And something like Wizard of Oz, when you think about it, it took them a year. But for them back then, I was like, we complain now about, oh my gosh, this show isn't going to come out until 2 years from now again, next season. And that would have probably killed the big wigs at the studios back then. They're like, what? 2 years from now? Yeah, no, that was not a thing back then. They're cranking those bad boys out like nobody's business.
Yeah, they also didn't have any. They're on a lot of drugs and other things to stay awake. And we know how that's why.
Oh, yep. Oh, we'll talk about that today a lot. So the film, it was looming in people's minds. The rights for the name of it kept changing hands, but it finally fell into the hands of MGM Studios. And the person who ended up buying it was Louis B. Mayer, which may sound familiar. We talked about him actually for a hot second, but he purchased the rights for it for $75,000. That's big back then.
Was big back then, but
wait till you hear about the financially weird things with this. So at the time, MGM was the richest motion picture company in the world. And the idea of making this story into a film, even for them, was still daunting at that time. But they decided they were going to try and they were going to go through it. Ooh, here we go. MGM decided on many things. The first workings of the movie were a nightmare. And much of that, they tried very hard to stick with the original mind and do the thing justice. It's not coming to fruition. The first reviews were rough. You can't find those clips and test films anymore, but they were not happy with it. We'll talk a little bit more about how that came to be at the very end too. Chaos. They had coaxed people to leave their jobs at Warner Brothers to come join this project when they finally did get the official okay on it. So people were leaving different companies to come work on this movie just for this movie, which was unheard of because people were very loyal and they had contracts for years sometimes with specific companies, not movies. When it came time to get the perfect Dorothy, the list of people they wanted dwindled as they were looking at different aspects of what they would need in an actress. And they stumbled upon a 16-year-old up-and-coming actress who would be known by the stage name of Judy Garland. They didn't want her originally, and it was really hard to pass that off that she was a 16-year-old when she was supposed to be a younger child for the movie. But they could not deny her ability to sing. Or her voice. It just matched the character very well. With the right costuming, they decided it would work. And so she was in agreement. She contracted with MGM and began working on the film. They knew that the other people that were in line for it, some of them declined right away just because a lot of people didn't believe in the ability of the movie. But we'll, in the Macabre Morsel section, we'll talk about who else they had on docket for Dorothy. I think it would have changed everything if they did this. The list of people that they wanted to play other roles in Oz, it was also very difficult, and it was like a revolving door. Either there was more demanding commitments at the time for these actors and actresses, or they just didn't believe in the movie. Same thing. They needed actors and people who could dance, preferably, to cover the range of these characters on the main stage acting troupe. And they wanted to bring Baum's characters to life in a way that had never been portrayed on the stage or the dreaded silent films. So when it came time to find their scarecrow, they were actually wanting actor and dancer Buddy Ebsen, which, poor Buddy, we'll get to him. But there was another tall dancer by the name of Ray Bolger. And he was begging for this role so hard that they actually gave it to him. So instead, Ray got the scarecrow, so they decided to make Buddy Ebsen the Tin Man. And then Bert Lahr would be signed on to play the Cowardly Lion. Now, Bert Lahr didn't have a huge history with film yet, so they were a little worried, but he ended up stealing the show sometimes, so they made a good choice.
I have to say, and okay, before we go further, I have to say, I watched this movie so many times as a kid. It was my VHS tape that was on repeat, and now when I watch it, I can say every line, all that, and I had a crush on the Scarecrow.
You did? Oh, he was so charming.
Maybe that's, I don't know what that is about mm-hmm. me now and the people that I would choose potentially to date and stuff, but you would think, oh, maybe the Tin Man, because he was like a romantic and whatever, but yeah. I just adored the Scarecrow. I thought he was so sweet and funny, and yeah, I had a crush on him.
Rightfully
he's
so.
My hear me out. He's my hear me out, Emily and Caroline. He's my hear me out, Emily yes. and Caroline. And I think Caroline said in our Would You Rather that this was her favorite movie. And I wanted to be like, it's my favorite movie too.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
You so now, just be like,
now she'll probably hear it because I'm sure they listen. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
they do. Hi.
Yep. Scarecrow's my hear me out.
I love that though.
Yeah.
Why not? He's so charming. I didn't put this in the macabre morsels that I could have, but back in the early 2000s, they did a French adaptation of a musical.
Oh, nice.
And they spun it. So the Scarecrow actually had a crush on Dorothy.
That is the vibe that I got when yeah. I was a kid. I was like, he loves her. You know, like I got that, like, he loves her.
I should send you the song that they have for him in the scene from the French one where he like confesses it. She's like sleeping over in the thing and he's supposed to be keeping watch for the Wicked Witch, and he just does this ballad and it's so well done.
I'm
like,
oh,
I should send it to you.
I
think you'd like it. It's so good. I love it.
A man with a sense of humor who's sensitive and kind.
Seeking knowledge. That's
yeah.
what.
Yeah. He's a nerd, clearly.
Yeah. Nerd, funny, charming. Yeah.
Can dance.
Foot package.
Yep.
Made of straw. Who cares? Mm. Love it. I love it. No, that's so awesome. I'm glad we talked about that because I'm like, there's some vibes going on.
So who's yours?
Yeah. I need to think on that. It might be the Tin Man in a weird way.
I get it.
Yeah.
He was a romantic. He was a lover.
Right?
Yeah. He had that voice too. And that
yes.
voice.
And yes. That's why I think that he's mine. Yeah. Is that it's that voice and like the, yeah, caring.
Anyways, okay, let's continue.
Yeah. So going back into the casting bit, let's get into some people that didn't work out, right? Because not only were they revolving doors with the actors and actresses, it was also that way for the directors before filming. And during filming, there's so many. And only Victor Fleming would go on to actually get credit in the movies. Nobody else for directing was listed, which is crazy. And I didn't even go into all of the names of them here because there's so many. I'm going to get confused. So the first director really wanted to hire on Gail Sondergaard. At that time, Gail Sondergaard was like a sex symbol. She was known for being glamorous. She had an image thing. She had to be a certain way in every movie because that was her image. That was her selling point. So when this director wanted to hire on as the Wicked Witch of the West, they were trying to go for that Snow White vibe. That
yes.
And the, yeah.
But sexy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's what Gail thought she was getting. So they started with that makeup, and legit, she looked exactly like the real life version of the witch in Snow White. In that case, when they did that, you can actually find pictures online of her. Yes, gorgeous. But when this got back to the studio, when they were doing all of their reviews of the promotional pictures, oh, the studio was not happy. They're like, that's not how the witch was portrayed in the book. We need a traditional evil-looking witch. So they tried to do that makeup, Gail was not here for it. She saw that and was like, I will not be in this. You will not count me in this movie. And I quit.
Worst decision of her career. Yeah.
Yes.
Or yeah. Maybe not.
Depending on. Depending on. We'll get
the makeup. Yep.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. She probably would never work again if she would have continued to be the witch based on what happens. So they were in a panic. They're like, if we don't have Gail, who are we going to get? If she wants to be glamorous, we can't try to find a big glamorous movie star to play her because probably the same thing. So they stumbled upon actress Margaret Hamilton, and she was given the role. She was excited. She wasn't one to be like, I'm about my image. She wanted to be there to have fun and play the role. Billie Burke was actually given the role of the Good Witch. She was actually the widow of another person who has recently passed away, who was starting to partake in the film, a big worker for MGM. And then Clara Blandick played Auntie M, and she was a very seasoned actress for the time. So they're getting some big names, along with fresh faces, which was a good combo. Once filming began, the magic and excitement went away. And they really realized that they weren't in Kansas anymore. Within the first 2 weeks of filming, it was already proving to be a challenge. By day 11, they got rid of their director and they brought in a new one. This wasn't the first time. And we'll continue to see that as a revolving door. So the directors, for the most part, will not be named in this show. This episode, sorry, but they won't. Except for Victor Fleming. But there's a reason for that. The director was replaced again a week later with another director. See, this is why we're not getting familiar with names. Not long after this happened, there was another transition that happened. And so there was just utter chaos. People were trying to cut corners now to get stuff done. And another catastrophe happened. Buddy Ebsen, who was originally the Scarecrow, then dubbed the Tin Man, had fallen very sick. According to a few people on set, Ebsen was just not feeling right during the rehearsal period, and this was days long. In the makeup chair, he was in the makeup chair for, like, hours. People said he got weaker after coming out of the makeup chair. And a lot of people just thought, hey, it's a long time in that chair. You're having to sit. Like, it could be he just got tired, whatever. One night, he woke up in agony, saying that he had cramping in his hands, arms, and legs. This soon was followed by the inability to breathe. So his wife called the ambulance and he was rushed to the hospital. The makeup that they were using for the Tin Man outfit was pure aluminum powder.
Yeah, was he in an iron lung for a yes. little bit because he of was. That? Ugh.
He was hospitalized for 6 weeks. He
Holy
was
in the shit.
Yeah.
Didn't and know it was that long.
It was bad. He was in the iron lung for over 2 of those weeks. Yeah. Ooh, think about how they would have administered that to the face, too. That's just flying everywhere. And you can't not breathe that in at one point.
And it's absorbing into your skin.
Exactly. It wasn't breathable. He was just covered in that stuff. And when you do makeup, you got to get in the nostrils a little bit. That shit was lingering in your nose hairs. And it was getting into the sinuses and coated his lungs. Coated. You can only be exposed to that kind of stuff for so long before you really start to react to it. The worst part is he attributed this for the problems that he had with his respiratory system the rest of his life, which, yeah, eventually that might have been the reason why he passed away. There were some things that he dealt with after this that he never recovered from. But in a later interview, Ebsen had recalled how angry the studio was at him, too. They were calling him in the hospital. And it's for what? They weren't apologizing. They wanted him to get back to work.
Yeah, they were like, when are you coming back to work?
Yep. And he had said, quote, they told me to get the hell back to work. you're in a fucking hospital for a respiratory problem.
Okay. Which they caused.
I'll be right on that. Yep. Which they caused. Yeah. It went on record that after the fact, when he was released from the hospital, he had a blue tint to his skin for some time just because of how much of an oxygen deficiency he had. How terrifying is that? I just, like, when I hear that kind of stuff, I think about a company I used to work for, and I'm just like, the fucking investing. Some people, the entire city. The studio just became very impatient. They were mad, first of all. They told him, they threatened to fire him and all that jazz. They did actually replace him before he even got out of the freaking hospital. So he would actually be replaced with Jack Haley.
That is some bullshit.
It is bullshit. Yeah. Buddy Ebsen is still credited with a lot of people because if he wouldn't have stepped in and did this and started what they did film for the Tin Man, it would not be the same. Jack Haley did a fantastic job. Don't get me wrong. But like Buddy Ebsen was really what got this going. And despite how much they harassed Buddy, they did change the makeup a little bit. So it wasn't as dangerous, but it was still dangerous. When Jack had joined the crew, nobody told him. Nobody told him. He knew that somebody else was on. He knew about Buddy. He knew that Buddy was no longer on the film and that he had taken his place. They didn't tell him why. So that's fun. Despite changing the makeup, he was still in danger because some of the stuff that they were using was still super toxic. At one point during filming, Haley did actually get a very serious eye infection. So in a couple scenes where you can see him do one of these a little bit, where it didn't seem like it's probably because of the eye infection.
Oh,
from the God. New makeup. Yeah. Now, if you go to watch this after this episode, just look for the little Easter egg shit that we'll talk about because it's all over the place.
I'm definitely
going
to do that.
Yes. While we're on the topic of makeup, because that's a big one. Why don't we talk about the different characters besides Tin Man and what it did to people? So we'll start with Scarecrow. Ray's Scarecrow prosthetics weren't porous, so he couldn't breathe underneath it. Now, while it wasn't really covering all of his necessities for breathing, it made him feel like he was suffocating because of just how dense it was. On the last day of the shoot, they went to remove the prosthetic and they found that Ray had burlap burns on and around his mouth and on his chin from the cowl. For the Cowardly Lion, Bert's costume was made out of real lion's hair.
And was fucking heavy, no doubt.
Yeah.
It looks so heavy.
He's pretty agile in that thing, but oh yeah. My gosh, I can't even imagine.
So hot. That'd be so hot.
And then think about that time frame. In the studios,
the lights.
Yeah. The Technicolor lights that they got for this filming were reportedly hotter than the regular ones. So people were passing out even in the lighter costumes.
Oh, my God.
And he was known to pass out in that thing. They'd have to cart him off set really quick and then do a refresh.
Oh, my gosh.
And then
poor guy.
I know. I feel so bad. And then they did all of those scenes so many times. And it's if you would have just been fine with the one that you thought was fine, I think a lot of this wouldn't have happened. But
it's showbiz.
Yep, that's the movie business for you. He had sweat so bad in that costume that at night when they tore him out of that thing, they had to put it in the industrial drying bin.
Oh, gross. It probably smelled so bad.
I bet. Oh, my gosh.
Just a bunch of BO. Over a long period of time because they weren't washing it.
No. And nowadays, it's like people have different costumes.
Multiple.
Same thing.
Yeah.
They did not have multiple of that one. Oh.
Gross.
Yeah. Poor Bert.
The stuff you don't think about.
Makes you wonder because remember when, wasn't it in that scene where he was first introduced, he did his song and dance to introduce himself? Didn't he pass out at the end? Maybe that was real.
Maybe.
Poor guy. So, yeah, definitely dealing with it. Bert, too. Let's talk about Dorothy. So Judy had a bunch of costumes and they changed so frequently. In the very, I think it was the first couple months, they were like constantly fighting over what she was supposed to look like. In the beginning, she was in like this massive, big blonde wig, heavy makeup, and sleeves of the dress were like so puffed up. Looked like a Lady Gaga dress.
Wow.
Yeah, you can find like a test image of her in it. And she looks like she's being eaten by the dress because they're trying to make it look like she was a kid in it, but she just looked like.
Yeah. I'm glad they changed directions on that.
Me too. I think it would have definitely taken away from it because they were trying to make her look younger, but she ended up looking way older. And it's like, I saw the picture while doing the research for this and I'm like, she looks so much older.
Yeah. That's what happens when you slap on a ton of makeup.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. They had done a few different like dresses and stuff too, but they kept with doing the minimal, like the bandage wrapping of her chest for all of the costumes because she got a lot of flack for her body image. Now she was 16. They were trying to make her look like this little girl and I don't know. There's a lot to be said about that portion of this for filming. She was harassed quite a bit. But it was just gross to be like, okay, yes, we're going to try to make her look like a tiny girl. But they also told her like she was too fat. Her curves were showing.
Which is fucking ridiculous.
Have you seen her? Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. So we'll talk about it. I put it in the next section, but they put her on a fucking diet of cigarettes and coffee.
And I'm sure drugs too.
Oh, yes. We'll talk about that too. They were constantly putting the main acting troupe for the movie on uppers and downers to get them to wake up.
And then put them to sleep.
And that would be for definitely not 8 hours. Like it was like four and they'd be back up again to do it.
It's no wonder that people developed addictions.
Yep. This movie really made and broke Judy. She was so young and the things that they did. Yeah, we'll talk about that later, too. But to give you a context with how they would end up treating her throughout the filming process, the costuming was what really started it. They were really not happy with the image. And it's like, she was gorgeous. But they were mad, like, oh, you're 16. Oh, you're starting to develop curves. Oh, you're fat. You can't look like a girl. Shut the fuck up. Okay, now let's get into the last person that we're going to talk about makeup incidents, because this will come into play later, too.
I know where we're going with this one.
Yeah, the Wicked Witch of the West. So, Margaret's makeup, also super problematic. About a month and a half before they were done wrapping up the shoot, one of her friends had told her in the makeup room that she looked, quote, so odd. And she was like, what? So she was super confused. So Hamilton decided to go into the mirror and take a look at her face. I already got it wiped off. What's going on here? And to her shock, she had a major side effect to the makeup. It was, of course, that green that they used was toxic. And I can't confirm this. I'll say it, but I couldn't confirm that this was true. In the Emerald City, that green paint that they used for some of the art and like the signs that they made allegedly was the same shit that they put on her. I don't know if that's true. I could not confirm that. So I didn't want to put that in as like a true fact here, but I wouldn't be surprised, first of all. And then second of all, that's like toxic. So what had happened was the green in the face had sunk into her skin. Like it stained. And we will talk about potentially why. But in an interview, Margaret had said, quote, it sunk into my skin. It must have been months before my face was really, truly normal again. End quote. Yeah, her skin had a colored hue to it and it was super raw from the chemical reaction. Now, we'll get into more of why later, but just keep that in the back of your mind for what happens. On top of that, the main Oz troupe even though they were going through it with the makeup and stuff. They were banned from eating at the MGM lunch cafeteria. Yeah.
Why?
Oh, yeah. I was like, are you kidding me? So when they had gone in for the first couple times in full makeup for their break, of course, that thing is always packed full of people getting lunch. Multiple people had gone up to the manager to complain because it was, quote, disgusting to watch them eat their meal because of the makeup and how, like, it was just, they couldn't handle that. People, other actors and actresses.
Give me a fucking break, man.
So they were complaining to the manager there, which the manager got so many complaints, they had to go back to the studio crew.
They were Karens before Karen was a thing.
Exactly.
No offense to the cool Karens out there, but I worked for a Karen, so I'm allowed to say that. Because she was the most Karen ever.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah. No. Shout out to all the good Karens. Sorry that you're dragged into this. Man. Other Karens, get your shit together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel so fucking bad. Like, they're dealing with all of that.
Yeah, and they can't go just fucking eat.
No! So it's like they had to have food brought to them, and like they had a little hovel. They had to stay in the hot, dense filming area to eat because nobody could apparently handle seeing that. Yeah. Oh, but oh, the makeup was horrific. We don't have to really tell you that, but so are the fucking props and side effects, or like the special effects shit too. Now, this one we definitely brought up in all, but asbestos. Yep, that was a thing. So the scene in the movie where they had the snow falling on them in the Posey Field, that was asbestos. If you didn't know, full on asbestos. They were catching it in their mouths. It was getting in their ears.
You could see it go up their nose, too. I looked at it the one day and I was like, oh.
It's so bad. And that shit clings. And that was all over them. Like, And then
in their eyeballs.
Yeah. And then if it gets stuck to the makeup, it makes you wonder at what point in the day did they film that? So how long was it truly sitting on them? This was so common back then, though. That was the common everyday substance that they used for snow effects in filming. And then also in anything that you bought back then that was a holiday decoration or in a holiday storefront that had snow. That was all asbestos, just so you know. Just, it was the main thing of the time. Carcinogens. Yum. Now, while we're on the topic of side effects, or special effects, I keep saying side effects, makeup.
The special effects cause side effects, so you're not really too far off there. Right? Side effects of the special effects.
Yeah, exactly. Well, oh, just wait. Special effects, not side effects. But also, we got to go back to Margaret Hamilton again. Oh, poor Margaret. Now, when they were filming the scene for the Wicked Witch disappearing in Munchkinland with that like big explosion, that was pretty real. That was a lot of damage. So let's break it down. In that scene, remember, that was the big, huge explosion of red smoke. And then she was gone. The special effects crew started that fire before Margaret had enough time to exit the scene. It gets really bad. So she was caught right in that burst of flames. It immediately caught her broom and her hat on fire. In a book written by Al Jean Harmetz called The Making of the Wizard of Oz, there was a written account of Hamilton's injuries, and they are horrific. Harmetz writes, in quote, scalding her chin, the bridge of her nose, her right cheek, the right side of her forehead, the eyelashes and eyebrow on her right eye had been burned completely off. Her upper lip and eyelid were badly burned. After the initial shock of this, she looked down to find the one hand had no skin on it.
Oh my God.
Yep, the one that was holding the broom. The skin was completely burned off of her hand. In the moments that followed, The crew had told her that she just needed to go. She needed to leave. There was no attending to her. It was just, you need to go. They did not even have the decency to give her a ride home. Her friend had to pick her up from the studio. Nothing more was said by the crew for the rest of the day. Just when you think the studio couldn't be more callous, they reached a level 87 in audacity skills and the who the fuck do you think you are enchantment spell, because it gets fucking worse. Because the very next day, they contacted Margaret. And they're like, when do you think you're going to be coming back to work?
Yeah, where are you?
Yeah. So this just goes to show that Margaret Hamilton is a stronger person than me, because I would have been like, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. I have no hand. Skin on my fucking hand. It took 6 weeks to recover from it. She was in the hospital for weeks. And then when she did go back, because she did, the nerves in her hand were still exposed. It was not recovered into a place that she would have liked to keep working. But she had to. It was still so severe that she had to wear green gloves over the bandages on her hands for the rest of the filming. Based on before, no, this is probably a huge reason for this, they used to use the same green makeup that they did on her face on her hands. They just coated her body in it. That goes to show you that the makeup they used just heightened the injuries. The chemical burn was out of this world because the... just thinking about this. The makeup was copper-based. Coppers. Just let that sink in for a hot second. In some scenes, they won't even show her full profile, like her whole face. They would show her profile instead. Many speculate now, because they won't say it, but I'm sure it had to do with trying to hide some of that.
Yeah, the injury, scarring, all that.
And you can tell this for sure. Like, in some scenes, she has full pure green all over her face. And then in some scenes, you can see a red tone underneath it in the green. And I'm willing to bet that's why. Oh, my gosh. I feel so bad for her.
And let's think, too, that when you're dealing with color balancing, that green is the balance to red. So the fact that you can still see it,
yeah,
tells you how bad it would have fucking been, because it should negate redness.
Right. That's so bad. Oh my gosh, that's just so bad. Ugh. No. And unfortunately, we will be coming back to her after this incident too. She did consider suing. I will say this part, but she had decided against it. So her reasoning was that she knew that if she did this, one, she would not win the suit. And two, if she even attempted, it would make her life a living hell. And she would never be able to find another career again in the film industry, because it would just ruin her. It's so sad that's the case, but she wanted to make sure that she still had this job because she was a single mom and she was trying to get as much of this in as possible just to pay the bills. Oh, man, there was so much shit back then in filming. Just another thing, flashback to when we did O is for Onset. We talked about so much of that bullshit that happened. Wizard of Oz was no exception. And because it was the first fantasy film in a way, with all the special effects that they had to do, it was so much worse for that kind of shit. It just leaves you speechless. Another reason why Hamilton wanted to keep her job was because she felt like she needed to protect Judy specifically. We'll get into that too and why. But there were a lot of people that she advocated for on set. And she's a very good person. But she didn't want to leave people hanging, because sometimes it was better to endure it as a group and get through it than to just... So yeah, she did return. She didn't sue. She just kept going.
I know.
Yeah. But let's talk about the next incident, though, with Margaret. the next level of audacity was unlocked for sure. When she was coming back to work, obviously she's wearing gloves. She's trying to get back in the makeup. It's burning. It hurts. She was basically asked to film another fire scene almost immediately after she got back. She was like, no, not again. So good for her for that. But that meant that her stunt double, Betty Danko, had to step in for her. Now, poor Betty has seen some shit on this set too. Betty would not recover fully from what happened. They had run a scene. We'll talk about what else happened. But this fire scene that they wanted Margaret to film, it really messed Betty up. Betty caught fire after igniting the broom from the pipe underneath that was billowing the smoke in the sky when she was writing out Surrender Dorothy. And it just ignited everything, and there was an explosion. Betty recalled, quote, "I felt as though my scalp was coming off. I guess that's because my hat and my black wig were torn loose," end quote. She had also suffered severe burns in her inner thighs. She suffered damage to her reproductive organs, which led to her having to have a hysterectomy.
I did not know about this.
Yeah. Can you fucking imagine?
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My brain is like, how were there not more lawsuits? But I know the answer. I know the answer to that question. So that's
exactly right. They could get away with fucking everything. And that wasn't the first time that Danko had gotten injured. But guess how much they paid her that day that she had that explosion happen? $35. And then she was sent to the hospital for 11 days. She did have permanent scarring to show for it. She had a really hard time. She was a stunt double, but she had a really hard time with getting anything after what happened because of what had to be operated on. But before this incident happened, and before Hamilton got injured with the other fire incident, Betty actually got hurt. She had injured her shoulder in another scene revolving around the disappearance in smoke from the Wicked Witch of the West. There was a trap door that was built into a certain part on the stage. She was supposed to drop into it. I don't know why, but one of the crew members was underneath it and was like coming up at the same time that they dropped her. And it like made an impact into her shoulder. And so she had some massive shoulder issues too. Yeah, she really went through it. This led Hamilton to having to do her own stunts while she was recovering from the shoulder injury, which is why Hamilton got injured from the fire scene to begin with. So like the whole thing was just... Yeah, Betty came back and then Betty got burned. Awful. And before we talk about Judy Garland, I hate to say it, but we're going to have to see you next time and talk about that.
Oh.
Teaser part two. Sorry, listeners. You're just going to have to stay tuned.
That's what happened with Onset, right?
Yes.
There's just a lot of story to tell.
Yeah. Thank you for coming to hang out with us today. You'll be getting the second one very soon, so hang tight. We love you. Have fun. Be safe. We'll shock you later.
Bye.
Bye.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.